From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Richard LaTendresse for TVA Nouvelle and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal. Our moderator is White House correspondent for West Wing Reports, Paul Brandes.
Hello, thank you for joining us. And here are the issues. An extraordinary split between President Trump and his top intelligence advisors. A probe into the Trump campaign's relationship with Russia rolls on. When will it end? Could there be another partial shutdown of the U.S. government? And finally, as the situation in Venezuela deteriorates, the Trump administration is backing a new leader there. Well, let's start with this situation with the president and his intelligence leaders. The top folks, I'm talking about the director of the NSA and the CIA, these types of folks, they testified in open public testimony on Capitol Hill this week, and they actually shot down very key claims that the president has made about North Korea and Iran and so forth. And the president got on Twitter and called them naive, said they needed to go back to school. Tom, what's going on here?
Well, this is a president who cannot tolerate criticism of any sort, even if it's a indirect criticism. These leaders of the intelligence agencies, including the FBI director appointed by him as well, none of them went before Congress with the intent of trashing the president, but they were under oath and they had to give an honest assessment when asked questions about the view of their respective intelligence agency. And they all said things that were not surprising, but they were infuriating to President Trump. And I have to say, I have always believed that he is still furious with the intelligence agencies for saying that Russia was involved in the 2016 presidential election. They had their thumb on the finger. They hacked into systems. They were involved in spreading critical information about Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee. And I think President Trump has just been enraged about that ever since. And so he kind of lost it and demanded they come into the White House 24 hours later. And he's now claiming that these very sophisticated individuals who are running the intelligence apparatus of this country were taken out of context. I mean, we all know here that the first refuge of scoundrels of all political stripes is to say, I was misquoted or I was taken out of context. This was all public testimony.
It was on TV.
On the record, on television. And so the notion about being taken out of context is absurd.
And the other thing, Richard, is that the people that he was criticizing, Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, Daniel Coates, the director of National Intelligence, Gina Haspel, the director of the CIA, he appointed all of them to these jobs, and now he has an issue with them.
He cannot blame the previous administration for their comments and their analysis, which shows that the president wants, and he does this very often, wants to push a certain narrative with ISIS and the caliphate. He has in mind that it's time to bring the troops back. There's a certain logic behind the whole thing. There's an electoral promise, but also he wants to show that he's doing something to his electorate on this very point. And now he's pushing the narrative that the threat from ISIS is not there anymore for the United States. And the demonstration of Gina Haspel from the CIA, for instance, was to say, no, that we're talking about thousands of fighters who are still on the ground. The entity, the territorial entity, is not there, but the fighters are there.
14,000 of them.
14,000 of them. North Korea is a fascinating case because the president really wants us to believe that everything he's done has calmed down the situation in the Pacific. And it's true, we haven't seen any new missile being fired. We haven't heard and felt any new nuclear tests being done. But the reality is that North Korea remains a nuclear regime that gets its legitimacy with its people from having become, even if we do not want to recognize it yet, a nuclear power. But the president wants us to believe that it's not a threat anymore. So whenever Dan Coats, the National Intelligence Director, says, no, they will never abandon their missiles, their program, their nuclear program, it's just counter-narrative for the president, and he can't bear having facts going against his perception of things.
And Tom, you said Russia a minute ago. The president did not say anything about Russia in his rant after their testimony, and these intelligence officials say that the Russians are going to be back for this 2020 election, going to be perhaps even better. Whatever they learned in 2016, they're going to apply to 2020, perhaps try and meddle with the election again. He wouldn't comment on that, wouldn't comment on something else that the intelligence officials say is a huge national security threat as well, and that is climate change. They think that is a really big deal in all kinds, and we could talk about that all day long, but he didn't comment on either of those things.
Well, he did comment in a tweet to this extent. He was pointing out how brutally cold it is in most of the country over the last several days, including here in Washington, and he said, where's climate change when we need it? Which scientists will tell you, and not just a couple of left-wing scientists, but the scientific community says that the extremes in our weather, more cold, more fires, more heat, more wildfires, and all of this is connected to global warming. So that was notable. The other thing that was notable about the event where he called in the intelligence directors for a dressing down, he was asked by a reporter, Mr. President, given the differences here, do you still have confidence in the advice you're being given? And he said, no. He said, I disagree with him on a few things. And he said, I think I'll be proven right. Now, can you imagine, as we speak from these microphones, what the state of morale is throughout the intelligence community when you have the president of the United States saying he doesn't have confidence in the assessments being handed him by his intelligence agencies? Pretty astounding.
It's kind of really demoralizing, I would think, for yes. A lot of those folks. Well, moving on, kind of a similar issue here, this investigation into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, and perhaps Trump himself and Russia, we don't know, continues. We all know, Richard and Tom, that the president calls this a witch hunt and a hoax, and yet these indictments and arrests by the special counsel just keep piling up here. Bring our listeners quickly up to speed, Richard, on sort of where all this stands.
Well, we know at the moment that 34 people have been charged, 26 of them being Russians, in this huge probe from Robert Mueller. And one of them, Roger Stone, was arrested last week and this week was indicted on 7 counts. What's interesting, which Roger Stone, this is like the... you were asking me, Paul, about where are we at the moment. He's the last one of the Trump entourage being suddenly plucked out of anonymity, if he ever was anonymous, and being integrated into this investigation, which is very interesting because Roger Stone could be the bridge, the missing link between WikiLeaks, which got emails and compromising or embarrassing information on the Hillary Clinton campaign from the Russian and the Trump campaign. He could be the bridge between this is what we're looking for. Roger Stone is coming out claiming now on all sorts of each time he has the opportunity to say it that actually the probe is a way to void the 2016 election, take the presidency from Donald Trump, try to mobilize the president base, the president electorate, to discredit an institution, which is the special prosecutor reality in this case. And that's where we are at the moment. But what was interesting is that Matthew Whitaker, the acting attorney general, having said that he has been briefed on the probe and he has the feeling that we're getting close to the end, gave us a perspective we never had. I mean, this has been a very close inquiry and the details haven't filtered much since the beginning.
Well, quickly, Tom, here, when Whitaker, again, the acting attorney general, says something like that, the Mueller folks, of course, they never comment on any of this stuff, but is there any, from your vantage point, do you sense that we're nearing an end here? And if so, what will come of it?
I don't think we're close to an end. I thought that was just something that Mr. Whitaker just decided to say on the spot. I don't think he has enough evidence to know about that, frankly. What we don't know is how much Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor, has that's not public, although it's probably a fairly substantial amount. Mueller is very cautious. He's very careful. He thinks several months down the road. I don't think he would have indicted Roger Stone if he didn't have lots more independent evidence to corroborate the charges that his office has now brought against Mr. Stone. And so I think we're looking at for many more months here. And of course, with the trials, some of the trials of people who have been indicted will go on for months and maybe into next year. I mean, I think Paul Manafort, who's been indicted on multiple charges, I think he's going to have another trial starting in September on some of the charges. So this is not going away anytime soon.
And rather quickly, the president gave an interview this week to the New York Times, and he was asked about this, and he said, stuck to his usual script, which was, this is anything. I'm not really worried about anything yet. But sometimes when Trump says something, what he really means is the opposite of what he's saying.
Right.
I think he's actually quite worried about this.
Well, yes, and he has said to friends, and friends have told reporters over the last several months, that he's worried about Donald Trump Jr., his son, possibly being indicted. I think he's incredibly worried about this, and a long way from being over.
All right. Well, let's pause for a short break. More Issues in the News in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you'd like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook, then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now, back to our panel, Richard LaTendresse for TVA Nouvelle and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal. Our moderator is White House correspondent for West Wing Reports, Paul Brandes.
Welcome back. You may have heard that the partial U.S. government shutdown is over, but guess what? Another shutdown is looming and could start in just 2 weeks. And like the last shutdown, the sticking point again is this wall that President Trump is demanding on the Mexican border. Tom, could there really be another shutdown?
I think it's very unlikely. I mean, the senior Republicans in Congress have been biting their tongue for months and have been saying, don't do a shutdown. Shutdowns always hurt the party in power who shut the government down, and all the polls show that President Trump and Republicans have been damaged by the shutdown. I mean, I believe that the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, I think he would break with the president before he allowed another shutdown to begin. But the president has said, I can do this with my own money and my own authority. If I have to, I'm going to get this wall built regardless whether Congress helps me. I think that's bluster. I think that is for the benefit of his base, which is about 35% of the American people. He needs to convince his base that he's doing everything he can, that he's fighting to maintain a campaign promise. If there's another shutdown, I think it would be catastrophic for Republican fortunes in 2020.
And just from a practical standpoint, Richard, you made a good point during the break about the intelligence chiefs on Capitol Hill, and they did not indicate, as you pointed out, that this was a threat at all.
No, they went through ISIS, through North Korea. They looked at the new and tighter relationship between China and Russia, and never did the situation at the border came up as an emergency the way the president presents it. That's why we noticed it at the White House. You noticed, Paul, following the president closely, that he's coming up constantly with extremely tragic examples, true or false, of women being duct taped and being put in trunks of car, and they, of course, they don't use the usual roads and go through.
So they turn left.
They turn left or they turn right, and his point being, like, he has to come up with extremely spectacular, dramatic examples to make it appear as a bigger threat than it seems to be. This said, they're sending 3,000 more troops to support the 2,300 already there. So it looks like in his argumentation and in his action, the president is bringing us closer to a national emergency order, since it doesn't look that he's going to get the money for the wall that he wants. He insisted again yesterday, during the week, I was listening to him, without a wall, it just doesn't work. And Nancy Pelosi says there's not going to be any money for the wall in the legislation. So...
Talking about the Speaker of the House.
Nancy talking Pelosi. About the Speaker of the House. So this is what I call a perfectly tight dead end. And there's not many other options than a new shutdown. And I think Tom was perfectly right in saying the Republicans see this as a major danger for them if we're going to go this way. So the national emergency order seems to be the only option.
Now, Tom, the one thing that has always puzzled me is that Trump always thinks that his political instincts are always correct and his radar is always so much better than everyone. And yet he said he'd proudly shut down the government and he'd be happy to accept the bulk of the blame for it. And that's what happened. He got the bulk of the blame for it. Why would he want to go through all of that again when, as you say, even a lot of Republicans are on the verge of breaking with him? Well, tell me about his instincts with regard to that.
Well, he can often be delusional. I think he's led a life that has been ultimately charmed, and he has never had to really do real negotiations. He's been a businessman, and you negotiate in a different way, but he's never had any government experience. And the give and take of the legislative process requires both sides. It's sort of like a divorce. Lawyers will tell you a good divorce is one where both sides are unhappy about something. And that's really the essence of legislative deal making. And Trump had a reputation for being a pretty good deal maker, but not in this context. And I think his attitude seems to be, let's negotiate, but you have to accept my propositions or there's no deal. And I think that's probably not going to work out. I think this is heading towards, not towards Armageddon, but towards a real clash of wills and more mess on the border, more mess on Capitol Hill. Now, it was interesting that Speaker Pelosi seemed to toss out a fig leaf for him the other day. She said, there's not going to be a wall, but we're going to enhance border security. We're going to give more money for agents, for technology, for drones, for more sophisticated ways to deal with this problem. And if he wants to call it a wall, he can call it whatever he wants to call. But so it sounds to me like the Democrats are smart enough to not to take the position that Trump is taking.
Well, to that point, there was a big drug bust this week on the border at a legal port of entry. It was a huge drug bust, and the president got onto Twitter and said, oh, our border patrol is great. This shows the need for more security. But this was at a legal port of entry, and the Democrats say, look, that shows that we need not a physical wall, but things like more technology and scanning devices and drones and more agents and that kind of thing. So therefore, security, just a different kind of security, Richard, not necessarily a physical wall.
Yes, something more technologically advanced, obviously. But if you come up with solutions like these, you do not answer to a certain percentage of Americans who perceive immigration, foreigners, illegals as a threat to the country. You can enhance the security with drones, but in the end, the president wants to answer with something concrete and as efficient as more modern, more technologically advanced border would be. There is it's a reality that has to be addressed from a different angle than just the border wall. But there's a good portion of American that think that there's an actual problem with illegal immigration in the country. And so there's definitely an obvious need for a comprehensive agreement on immigration that should be done beside this fight for border security. But we're not there because it's the issue nobody wants to touch, because it never brings us anywhere.
All right. Well, moving on, people are often surprised to know that the South American country of Venezuela has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, more than the Saudis, more than the Russians, more than anybody, a vast amount of wealth under the ground. And yet that country is spiraling into chaos and poverty. Things are so bad that the Trump administration is now has come out publicly and said that it is backing an opponent of the leader there, Nicolas Maduro. Tom, who is this man that the White House is backing?
He's the head of the Legislative Assembly. He's kind of like Venezuela's Nancy Pelosi. And Venezuelan law and the constitution of that country says that if that he, under certain circumstances, the speaker can become an interim president. And the opponents of Maduro are arguing that the election, the last election, which reelected Maduro, was rigged, was tainted, and needs to be invalidated and thrown out. And the United States has thrown its lot with the anti-Maduro forces. And the Chinese and the Russians and the Koreans, North Koreans, are backing Maduro. So I don't know where this goes, although one way we know bad things are happening is their economy. Their economy is in a basket case. Their essential goods and services are in serious, serious trouble. People are dying, according to health officials, because they can't get their medicine.
Well, here's the question for you, Richard. You know, President Trump ran 2016 saying America can't be the world's policeman anymore. We're just too tied down all over the world. Well, then why on earth would he want to get involved, as he has hinted, about getting involved in this mess in Venezuela? We can't be the policemen here.
No, you're right. And that was one of the questions that was asked to John Bolton, his national security advisor. And he answered, this is in our hemisphere. It's in our backyard. And so we have to take this into consideration. Also, because of Venezuela oil resources, of course, the oil market is on its edge, because we're always wondering which way it's going to go. And we have to be conscious that the reality on the ground in Venezuela is so harsh for, as Tom explained, that 3 million Venezuelans flew in exile, 1 million in Colombia. You're destabilizing a region again, and these people are going to start moving up to the U.S. And then you just pile up on the supposed crisis at the border. So, you know,
what is he proposing to do?
Well, he's proposing to first, he hopes that there's going to be a understandable change of power, with Juan Guaido, the president of the National Assembly, being accepted as the interim president. He's supported, the president is supported by the Canadian government, the Europeans on this. But that was interesting. Again, I just want to come back to John Bolton, Paul, because this week in the White House, in the press briefing room, exceptional briefing this week, 41 days after the previous one, he came up with a map showing the countries supporting the U.S. in asking for the removal of Maduro. And there was a clear understanding that there's actually a good number of countries that are still supporting Maduro. So Dan Coates underlined the fact, and Tom was reminding us, that Cuba, Russia, China, to a certain extent, will keep on supporting Maduro. They're not small little countries like their major powers. So the president hoped that this is going to be a smooth transition, natural transition. The fundamental question is, Maduro, Nicolas Maduro, is still supported by the army. So how are we going to find a way to remove Maduro without a reaction from the army? This is going to be a major challenge for the United States. But by attacking PDVSA, which is the oil state-run oil company in Venezuela, that could be one way to just tighten the situation over there.
All right. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about Venezuela in the weeks ahead. We'll have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Tom DeFrank, he's contributing editor to National Journal, and Richard LaTendresse, he's with Canada's TVA Nouvelle. This program was produced by the Voice of America Current Affairs, our engineer, Justin Thwaites. And I'm Paul Brandis of USA Today and West Wing Reports. Thank you very much for joining us.